This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. In September of 2015, Europe was dealing with its biggest refugee crisis since the Balkan Wars. Thousands of people were fleeing violence in the Middle East and seeking asylum in Germany, Austria, and elsewhere. It prompted a variety of reactions, some cold and brutal by pandering politicians, but others much more humane. Pope Francis, for instance, called on every parish to take in at least one refugee family. His appeal was meant for Europe's Catholics, but it also resonated right here in Greensboro. Guilford College professor Dia Abdo was among those who heard the Pope's call. She began an effort to house refugees on Guilford's campus, and it has since spread to colleges and universities across the nation. Her program is called Every Campus a Refuge, and Dia Abdo joins me now on The State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
So take us back to that moment in 2015, the inspiration for this, for you.
Yeah, I was watching in horror what was happening in Syria, obviously, and then the sea of humanity, people just trying to make their way across Europe. And I remember seeing, hundreds and thousands of people trapped in Hungary and hearing about volunteers coming down from Austria, taking them in their cars up to Germany. And I remember feeling so helpless. Being here in the U.S., when you're a professor, it sort of just gets old going to class and rationalizing that you're changing the world. And I just wanted to do something physical. I wanted to do something real with human bodies. And then when the Pope called on every parish to host a family, I realized that campuses are very much like parishes. We're small towns. We have everything you need in a small town. And I'm Arab, Muslim, Palestinian, and an important word in Arabo-Islamic discourse is haram. And the word for a university campus is haram al-jami'i, which literally means refuge. The word haram means sanctuary. And the university campus is a sanctuary. And of course, when you think about Guilford's tradition, its history, we've always been a campus sanctuary, a refuge. We've been part of the Underground Railroad. We've housed Japanese Americans in World War II and then Montagnard refugees in 2000. So it's always been a place hospitable to dispossessed and displaced human beings. And so this made perfect sense, right, to use my campus as that physical space that could alleviate in some way this immense crisis.
And of course, it is rooted in a religious tradition,
yes.
And most religions have at their root radical hospitality, this idea that you open your arms to strangers without question.
Yes, and I like the term radical hospitality. I've since come to realize that it's not radical at all, right? When you say radical, it suggests that it's something sort of unusual, extraordinary. But I mean, if you think about a campus, every year we open our arms to thousands of students, much riskier populations, 18-year-old kids leaving their families for the first time.
When we think of radical meaning, exotic and strange, but the root meaning is indeed root. It is rooted in the word root, which is to say the center and the founding of all of us is in our community and in our communal. We wouldn't be here as a species if we didn't cooperate with each other. So you come to this idea. Now, what does Guilford University think of your radical interpretation of their mission?
Right. So I remember having this idea while out on a walk, and then I go back to my house, and I write an email to the president and say, I think I want to do this. I need to speak to you. I go see her, Jane Fernandez, and she immediately says, yes, of course. Which was wonderful. I did not expect to meet resistance, and I didn't get it.
Yeah.
And so it says a lot about Guilford.
Yeah. So then you also partner with a local resettlement agency,
yes.
Right?
And that's vital. Campuses don't just simply pick refugees and resettle them. You partner or collaborate with a refugee resettlement agency that assures cases of legal refugees coming into the U.S. And then if a case fits Guilford College or whatever campus is collaborating with their local refugee resettlement agency, then we are able to host those refugees.
And what does that
campus
mean now for a college campus to host a family? How does that look on the ground?
It looks like first you identify a viable space on a campus. Many campuses own homes, houses, apartments. Think about all the dorms that are empty in the summer months when people desperately need affordable housing. So it looks like identifying that viable space and then recruiting volunteers, students, faculty, staff, spouses, folks from within and without the campus community to help the Refugee Resettlement Agency in fulfilling resettlement tasks. So it looks like taking people to appointments. It looks like helping them fill out forms. It looks like taking them to get their groceries. It looks like tutoring their kids, yeah. signing them up for school, things
and
like that.
And that makes the university campus a perfect place because people can volunteer to do those things and help refugees navigate mm-hmm. these many, many agencies and institutions that they're going to have to work through. So you have folks come to campus. Is there a sense that you have to generally educate the campus and sort of announce this program, or do you do it and just try to find volunteers? How does it work?
Right. So at Guilford, and I hope that every other campus that does this does it this way, which is that you have to get community buy-in. And because a campus is fundamentally an educational place, it was really important for us to use this for an educational purpose, which is to educate on forced displacement on the refugee crisis. So we spent an entire semester having discussions, panels with the directors of the refugee resettlement agencies, screening movies about the refugee crisis so that folks knew what was happening. And then from the folks who showed up to those events, we enlisted volunteers. And so it was, we really had sort of a built-in volunteer core from folks who attended all of those events.
Can you tell us about the families? Three families so far?
Two families and a single. Mm-hmm. So the first was a Ugandan gentleman who stayed with us for about 5 months. And the second case was a Syrian family of three. And the third case was a Syrian family of seven.
And so what's happened so far? And, you know, can you give us a sense of how things have gone for them?
Have gone very well. So in the first instance, the single was of college age, and so he got on very well with the college students, and he spoke good English, and so he was able to create a community of support very quickly. In the second and the third instance, the families stayed in homes on our campus, and the students would the students who volunteered and who knew where they lived. It was very important for us to maintain confidentiality. So while people knew that we had refugees on our campus, nobody, unless you were a volunteer who was directly involved with the family, knew where those families were living, and of course public safety knew as well. So the students would drive them places, and it wasn't always students. One of my favorite volunteers is the spouse or the husband of our president, Jim Fernandez, who was a really active volunteer and helped drive folks, the first Syrian family, to English classes, and eventually when they moved off our campus, helped move furniture and things like that. Yeah.
So what were some of the unanticipated challenges in this program?
I would say primarily for me was the language barrier. I speak Arabic, but we don't have many volunteers who spoke Arabic. In the second and the third case, the Syrian families had very little English. And so it fell on me and the two other volunteers to always mediate or to always be involved. And I think moving forward, that's something that we have to think about, having more volunteers who speak the languages involved.
What about you did this at a time when there was a lot of hate speech and fear-mongering going on, particularly in this state, coming from politicians and mm-hmm. lawmakers at the highest levels of government, fear-mongering mm-hmm. and telling us that this is too deep a threat, we have to close our doors. Mm-hmm. Did that create a sense of resistance for you? Did it make it a hostile environment for these families?
I think it had sort of a double... It was a double-edged sword. I think the resistance is what put Every Campus a Refuge on the map to begin with. Mm. Because they made a big deal about it, people heard about us. And that's the story from the Washington Post came on the heels of that. And so on some level, they actually publicized the program in ways that made it much more popular. And of course, the greater the fear-mongering, the greater the resistance. I'm a great believer in resistance. And so the more xenophobia, the more humane, compassionate, empathic response that we got from the community. I very rarely got any negative responses. Many people came out of the woodworks wanting to volunteer, wanting to donate, wanting to give.
Now that's interesting. Tell us more about that then people coming from outside the university community asking to help. I mean, were these people, and I'm guessing too, if you have that number, there are probably some people who may never have volunteered before and were telling you that. What were some of the stories you had mm-hmm. from community volunteers?
So one of my favorite stories is Deep Roots Market, who Jonathan May, who's on the board, and he's a Guilford alum, heard about the effort and thought, this is such a great way for another community institution like Deep Roots Market, our local co-op, to be involved. And so not only did they provide free groceries and toiletries, but they also raised funds. And now Deep Roots Market and Jonathan reach out to every local co-op for every campus who's interested in becoming a campus refuge to create those collaborations. So it's a wonderful way for building not only intra-campus community, but just community building between the campus and other institutions.
Well, that's the way the culture of cooperative, if you talk about a cooperatively owned grocery store, there's already a culture there. Right. And so then it builds on itself, as you suggest. And then if you have a university and a co-op grocery store, they begin to spread a far different message than we hear from the highest levels of government in this state. What about spreading it to other college campuses? I mean, how did you do that initially? Obviously, there was publicity, but did you make a kind of an aggressive effort to reach out to other campuses?
When campuses would hear about this, I would always get email requests saying, can you tell us more about this? So initially, it just involved a lot of talking on the phone, visiting institutions, visiting faith communities. So that's another aspect of the community collaboration. Faith communities have been, especially the Quaker meeting houses around Guilford College. So it involved a lot of me reaching out and also visiting, talking to those other institutions that were interested. And because of that, now we have three campuses hosting refugees and a fourth very soon to be hosting. And all of them are not in North Carolina, which is wonderful. It means that it's spread pretty wide.
I wonder what are some of the other effects of this, or maybe your aspiration for this. I mean, on the one hand, for those refugees who are allowed into the country, it's a kind of hospitality and a way to help resettle them. You can imagine being even more assertive about this and becoming a lobbying group to allow more refugees in. Is that any kind of a political aspiration to mobilize support for more humane treatment of refugees around the world?
Well, the idea is that if there are, of course, hundreds and thousands, millions of refugees, and one of the concerns is not enough space. In other words, if you put a lot of refugees in one area, that might tax the region. If you think about the fact that there are thousands of campuses all over the world, so this is a global call. It's not just a call to the U.S. campuses. If every campus hosted a family, that's thousands of people resettled immediately, at least on a short-term basis. So I'm not sure in terms of political lobbying, but it's certainly our mission to spread this as far and wide as possible.
How far and wide has it spread? How many universities are involved in this?
So four in the U.S., and I think one in Canada. I'm not sure about the rest of the world, but hopefully.
Usually the Canadians are ahead of us,
yes.
But the fact that they've opened their doors means maybe they don't need this program, a far more enlightened policy up there. North Carolina universities and campuses?
Wake Forest. Mm-hmm. Is about their President Hatch just released a statement saying that they've joined the Every Campus Refuge program. So hopefully that means they'll be hosting a family soon.
What about, I talked about some of the unanticipated challenges, but what about some of the unanticipated bonuses, some of the surprises for you that turned out to be great blessings you hadn't expected?
I think just the community building and the ways in which bonding happened between faculty, staff, students, spouses. We even had volunteers from Bennett College who wanted to do this on their campus but wanted to sort of to test what it looked like. And the ways we all bonded with the refugee families and our single, especially around moments of hospitality. So they opened their doors to us and invited us for meals. And I remember one of my favorite moments is a lovely meal that we had at the first Syrian family's house. And we had invited other refugees that we were volunteering with off campus, Afghani refugees. And nobody spoke any of the languages, right? There were some translators, but everybody communed over food and it made perfect sense. And it was really wonderful.
The refugee crisis has not abated. Is the program continuing, and what are your aspirations for the future?
Yes, absolutely. To resist even more and to raise the call more loudly and to spread the word as far as possible.
Dia, thank you so much. As
thank
always,
you.
What a pleasure talking to you. Dia Abdu is the founder and director of Every Campus a Refuge and a professor of English at Guilford College. You can find out more about her and the project at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Ormond, Katie Barron, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Wadarski is here today as well. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. You can hear some music now from AM Rodeo, Jessica Mashburn on the keyboard and vocals, Evan Olson on the guitar. They perform every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock at Printworks Bistro at the Proximity Hotel in Greensboro. I'm Frank Stasio. Once again, AM Rodeo. Three, four. Thank you.
shelter from the fire. Take this frightened child. Teach him what love is. We're the same, you and me.